What's up, guys? Welcome to the Built Different stream. We're your hosts, as always, the Faruqi Bros. And we got a big week. It was a big week today of a lot of news, ranging from all of the pop culture stuff we all enjoy. So let's not even waste any time and get right into it. We got some cool guests who will be joining us momentarily. So let's start with what we feel some of the most important news that have wide-reaching impact heading into 2021. And that's going to be the news about Christopher Nolan. So Christopher Nolan has led other directors and actors in criticizing Warner Brothers' 2021 HBO Max decision. So for those who don't know the full story, basically, we talked about it on the last Built Different stream, but we talked about it also in multiple podcasts, that Warner Brothers made the decision that every single film in the 2021 slate is coming out simultaneously on theatrical, where it's available, and on streaming on HBO Max. And we talked about at the time, the discussion was very much, is this a good idea for the films or not? But we didn't really talk about, is this good for theaters or for the longevity of the classical cinema experience? And that's when Christopher Nolan, who a lot of us or many people recognize as the best, one of the best current directors in the modern era, well, he took no stops when it came to taking Warner Bros. Down a peg or two. And I'm going to read some of the quotes right now for you. He said, HBO Max is the worst streaming service, first of all, like straight up. And he said, WB had an incredible machine for getting filmmakers work everywhere. And now they're dismantling it as we speak. And that the decision makes no economic sense. And that the process was very messy and a bait and switch. So these are not words that, you know, are calm. You know, these are not calm words coming out of Christopher Nolan's mouth. So people are angry. And Denis Villeneuve, the director for Dune, he also chimed in with the op-ed for on Deadline, where he again said that not only did Warner Brothers kill the Dune film, they also killed the Dune franchise going forward. Like, these are harsh words from some of the best directors out there. So it's not a small issue, no doubt about that. And people are angry about what happened. So we'll go around the room and kind of see what we think about it, because it is one of those like dice situations. I mean, right now people are saying that Matt Reeves actually only pushed the release date for The Batman, not because the film was naturally getting delayed because of restrictions from the pandemic, but because he didn't want to get caught up in that theatrical HBO Max split. He'd rather wait so that the movie can come out on HBO Max as is. Not HBO Max, come on theaters as is. So we'll start with Zian, and I guess we'll go with Zian, Samir, and then Umar, because we watched Tenet, and obviously it did what it did. It came out in the middle of the pandemic being almost at its worst. So it not doing that great is not surprising, but hey, what can you do, right? So when you saw Christopher Nolan lash out, and now some people are saying that he might be done with the studio forever, what do you think about that, Zian?
Well, honestly, they do have merit in what they say, both Denis Villeneuve and Christopher Nolan, because, you know, when they work on these projects and the whole team, the cast and the crew, they put a lot into this, you know, not just monetarily from the studio side, but just them putting all they have into their craft and making an amazing product. They want it to be shown a certain way and present to the audience a certain way for the best effect to be seen the best way it possibly can be. And we know Christopher Nolan in the past, people make jokes about it all the time on Twitter about how he should see his movies and how he wants you to see his movies. But as a filmmaker, you just want it to be seen the best way possible. And for in this shift, obviously Warner Brothers has to do what they think is the best move going forward in a post-pandemic world. So as far as they're concerned, as far as the directors are concerned, I mean, it will be a big change. It will be a big change from the normal theatrical model. And as far as the Dune franchise and those kind of comments, he's right, because the metrics change. Because before, it's like, all right, if they achieve this much box office, then they'll look forward to or look into continuing a franchise. But now it's like, how would they measure that? Will it be on views per stream or on the addition of new streamers because of that movie or leading up to that film? Like, what measurements will Warner Bros. Look at when they're thinking about what franchise or what movie should they do next? What should they continue? So obviously it is risky in this sense, where maybe you won't get as many people to watch Dune. I think it will be more, in my opinion, because streaming service, I feel like Tenet, if they got on streaming early, maybe that would have even helped it even more. Because once again, we don't know what kind of monetarily what Warner Bros. Is looking at, but we saw how the theatrical model worked for Tenet, and obviously it underperformed well below what it could have or should have, what things have been normal during this year. But obviously it was craziness and nobody really knew what they were doing. But going forward, it is a risk. So it makes sense why these directors would be so trepidatious about this move.
And then Nolan did actually make a point in one of the recent podcasts he showed up that he said that even releasing Tenet in theaters is not his decision and that he would have delayed it too. But of course, Warner Brothers theaters was a very dice situation. So now you have two sides. Like, we always thought it was two things, right? You thought this is streaming versus old school theatrical model. But now Nolan made the point that, listen, it's not just us, the directors, the actors. There are unions that are the crew members. There's people like that who are not going to get paid the same, not going to be recognized the same. I'm not sure exactly what the full scope of that means, but it is very interesting that Nolan's bringing up these multiple points and also are these multiple high-profile directors. And then you get to some of the controversial aspects like Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot getting paid $10 million each on the back end for their movie going to HBO Max, but the other directors weren't even told about it. So there's some. It's a little... it's weird. It's weird, but at the same time, it's a pandemic, yeah, right? So my mindset is always in the sense that what is more important here? And are we trying to, you know, protect lives as much as possible? Or there's a give and take, like with restaurants, like there's a give and take, you know, like you had to let people in at some point to dine in, now taking it away again. So I don't know, Umar, like when you look at it, like, is there a moral or ethical point in this story where it's like morally you got to go to streaming, or you think that's not a case here? Did Umar not hear me? All right, so Samir, do you want to take that one? Do you think it's like a moral right or wrong to this?
I think it's a really hard issue to get around, and frankly, the way Warner Brothers handled it by giving Gal Gadot and Patty Jenkins $10 million each, I think that was not right. But then again, we really have to see how Wonder Woman does on the streaming service. I mean, this is the first time we're going to see the shift, other than the time we saw Disney do it with Mulan, which obviously didn't go well at all. So, not really sure.
Yeah, and even on top of that, like you said, Disney even upcharged $30 premium to their own members to watch the film, and it still underperformed. So, you can see from that, just that alone, that, okay, will it work? Will it not? But W's taking the dive, and we'll see what it means for the directors going forward. I know they're probably going to delay. Like, I guarantee Christopher Nolan is going to start, if he had any projects in mind, he's going to delay them until things are perfectly normal or shop it to the studio, because clearly from his words, he's not going to pursue anything with Warner Brothers if they continue this specific model. Or maybe they'll move to a thing where just next year, because of how things are, everything will be simultaneous on streaming. But maybe going forward, it'll be some are on stream and theatrical, some are just theatrical. They can probably look into that, and maybe that'll help quell some of the directors' issues.
Well, which other studios would take that kind of risk? I mean, we see Disney is going full streaming also. We saw their investor day, they announced a bunch of new stuff, and it's all going to be primarily just streaming.
They did put theatrical dates for all three of their major Marvel films next year. So, and they didn't really mention that those are going to come simultaneous on Disney Plus. They just said, all right, it's going to be theaters this day. Theaters this day for Black Widow, Shang-Chi, and Eternals.
That's true.
I don't see if it's delayed or not, but they said theatrical. So
yeah, I don't think the way that Warner Brothers just announced the whole slate for next year completely on streaming. I think Disney's taking a smarter approach to just waiting and seeing how this pandemic goes into the next year. We know the Pfizer vaccine is being tested or is going to come out soon. But I think Disney's smarter to just wait and see.
There's no doubt that Disney played it smarter than Warner Brothers. There's no doubt about that. Like, Warner Brothers, Omar, you want someone to speak on that? Like, look at the strategy between both, because Disney was also said 10 Marvel shows, 10 Star Wars shows. But in reality, some of those projects could have been movies also. Like, the Obi-Wan movie was originally a movie before it became a series, right? But they didn't catch flack for it because of the way they put it out there. Whereas Warner Brothers, you know, they got hammered basically for doing that the way they did. So, can you want to speak on that?
Yeah, I think that's the key, and I agree with Samir that I think there should have been more. There should have been more of a patient approach, because you kind of kneecapped all your, like, it's so weird that they just announced, they just took a decision, and then first of all they paid Gal and Patty Jenkins $10 million or some crazy amount, which is, again, it's a stupid PR move. Same with like saying, okay, everything, we're gonna move everything to streaming, but you didn't. But it feels like you didn't talk to your actual, you didn't talk to the people that are working for you. You know what I'm saying? So what did you expect them to do? And then with Christopher Nolan, you didn't give him a chance. He's a huge director. You knew that he's a big enough fish to where if he starts talking after you take a decision, that it's going to have a really bad impact on the future directors that you might want to work with. So Disney was definitely smart. I think Warner Brothers should have thought of being more patient, and also the films that you're releasing could easily have been, like, if you did want to succeed in terms of streaming, and you think that, you know, just putting the movies on there is gonna somehow it's not gonna work out the same, well then go all in for it then. Like, yeah, you can make these things you know, different series or whatever. And then as far as like the movies that are going to come out later anyways, it would have been best to been a master of your silence and a slave to your words, because now you can't, you know, you can't go back now and be like, oh, you know, we changed our mind. It's going to look stupid. It's going to look bad.
One of the comments here, this, from Paul, he said, Jason Kellar, who's obviously the head of things now, at Warner Media, he said it's not realistic to spend months talking to all the creators when they can reach out to them after the announcement. Well, you know, that's one of those things, because it still feels like, especially the big names, like, not that, you know, everyone's treated equally or not, but in the reality in show business, they're not. You saw, like, some people will give an extra heed that it's about to happen, but other people were blindsided. It's just weird that Christopher Nolan was blindsided, given he's one of Warner Bros. Top directors, if not their top one right now. And he wasn't told because of situations like this, because he wouldn't have agreed. If they told him, listen, whatever future movie you have planned, either wait on it or it's going to HBO Max.
It's the same as the Lakers making some decision without, you know, talking to LeBron James. Like, it doesn't make any sense. You got to talk to the big guns. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It doesn't make any sense to, like, just make decisions and then...
And the last point as we kind of ease out of this topic is that streaming was always... And I made this point last week also. Streaming was always knocking on the door of theaters. It was always happening, and that's something people have to understand, that it's not like just the pandemic killed theaters, which it did, escalate it extremely, but things were already looking kind of shaky. Even though last year was a good year for theaters, there was always a sense that, okay, streaming is getting bigger and bigger, to the point where even in the award show, the Oscars last year, two of the top 10 nominated films were Netflix films, right? So streaming was not only making your art house cinema style movies, where Martin Scorsese signed a first look deal with Netflix, right? So even the big directors were moving in that direction, knowing that this is the path that entertainment will go. It's not something we all like or needed to happen. The theater experience, something we all enjoyed, but the truth of the matter is things have to evolve and change with time, right? And as you know, people made points that, you know, like, when we moved out of physical media, which was the only way back in the day, was like, you got to pop in your VHS tape, your DVD. We still have Blu-rays now, but the way people consume media digitally is bigger than ever. And that makes a point. One of the reasons GameStop is almost going out of sale, going out of business, is because people are buying games digitally more than ever, right? So the same thing is physically going to the movie theater, which is a great experience. It's an important experience. I love that experience personally. But we don't know if, even without the pandemic, 5-10 years from now, it would be a reduced version of what it is. And that's the kind of main thought I'm putting out there. And it's not that I disagree with Christopher Nolan or not. If Warner Media made this announcement last year without the pandemic, I would have been with Nolan, standing up and be like, this is a bad decision. But when you combine everything, combine the trajectory, combine the state of movie theaters as they are, the fact that indoor dining closed again in New York City, the theaters have not been open in this city since March, LA is in a similar boat, you're losing your key markets. It's, even if you get a vaccine out, it's a tough bet to put all your chips and people are coming back. Now, I hope that Warner Media in 2022 puts everything back to how it was. I doubt it, because that's not how Warner Media does business. So I'm just putting it out there, I doubt it. Like, we're not coming to a happy ending where everyone works together. Streaming is here to stay, but it's going to be interesting, and we can go through some comments and see what people are thinking. So one of our writers, Jesse, he chimed in saying that, "I think Warner definitely mishandled the delivery of their decision and overlooked the importance of communicating with the creative team beforehand. But I think that this is more about pushing the streaming platform, supposedly going to be banned after reporting low subscriber numbers recently. And just like you're saying now, theaters have been on the downtrend for years. This puts them ahead, right?" And this is, we agree with that. First of all, you're right about the name change. There are some rumors that they might change HBO Max to Warner Max, which we'll see how it goes. I did hear that when they announced that Wonder Woman is going to streaming, they did go up by about 3 million subscribers or so. So they are finding their subscribers, but that's the new metric now. Now you judge yourself on subscribers, which is funny because that's how sometimes YouTubers do it. Also, it's like things are kind of consolidating in a funny way. But it's a topic that's not going to go away anytime soon. Like that's for sure. Like it's something that we're going to keep talking about as time goes on. And I think you can be for sure that this chat, the four of us, we're going to be the stream. We're going to be talking about it as well. So let's move on from streaming from Nolan, and let's jump into the Disney Investor Day, right? And we talked about this in our last stream. This was a big event, and we talked about it in our last topic that Disney handled their event pretty well, right? They handled it pretty well. So the next step is, where are we going from here? What's the next plateau that Disney can go? And one of the things was how they're going to make their biggest franchise, their biggest IP, streaming heavy IPs now. And then Star Wars and Marvel are each getting 10 shows each. So we thought that might as well bring in the resident Star Wars expert on our team. So we'll bring him in right now. Sean is he's here. He's coming through. What's going
on, guys? Sean? How are you? Good to see you guys all. Good to be back on the stream.
So, man, I'm going to hit you with the questions pretty quickly and see what you think about it, because I know last time you were here, we talked about how the four of us were big-time prequel nerds, and we're going to always, you know, treasure those three movies almost above all. But Hayden Christensen coming back as Darth Vader for the Obi-Wan Kenobi series, I want to hear what you think about that, and just give me your thoughts, sound off, about that specific part first.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited. I mean, obviously, I'm a big prequels fan. I mean, I grew up on sort of that side of the franchise as well as the Clone Wars. So for me, that is really what's super important and really exciting about the Kenobi series. For a long time, I was a big advocate of having Kenobi kind of stay on Tatooine and do sort of a more introspective sort of character piece, almost in like a Logan way, where like you're really diving into like that character and what he's going through. But it sounds like they're going a different route with that. And if you're going to bring in Vader, if you're going to do flashbacks, if you're going to do anything related to the prequels, you got to bring Hayden back. You have to do that dynamic again. I'm a big fan of his performance. I know some people aren't. But I also hope, too, with the Kenobi series, that we're going to get some Rosario Dawson as Ahsoka flashbacks, too. Kind of bring that together and kind of bring a whole Clone Wars sort of feedback and Clone Wars flashbacks. And that'll be awesome.
Yeah. And you know, one thing I want to ask you about is Kathleen Kennedy did say in the presentation that, you know, these guys are headed towards the rematch of a century. And I'm paraphrasing there, but like there's a lot of hints given that the two will be not just like maybe they just through a flashback of some kind. But a lot of people are, you know, thinking that what if these two guys meet up again in a fight? But give me the logistics of that, because we know in A New Hope, you know, when Vader is sensing Obi-Wan's presence, and from the line where he said that, you know, I haven't felt this since, and then when he said, when I left you, it was about the learner. This all kind of leads into them not meeting since Revenge of the Sith. But let's say, we'll play hypotheticals, they do meet somehow and it's not a flashback. Would you want that, or how do you think that would even work out?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I think logistically can work. I mean, there are a lot of lines in the original trilogy that the prequels directly, like, sort of retcon in a sense. I mean, a go-to for me is, you know, Obi-Wan says how Anakin wanted Luke to have his lightsaber. That's not true. That's not how that happened. Obi-Wan just picked it up and took it. So I think that you can kind of play with that. I do think that there are certain elements of, depending on, I think they said this is going to take place 10 years after Revenge of the Sith. So like really smack in the middle of A New Hope and Revenge of the Sith. So Vader's pretty experienced at this point as Vader. I think that a rematch would be cool. I think that having that fight from Revenge of the Sith. I don't think you can top that. I mean, that fight's amazing. I do think since we've seen it in fan films, like people have redone the Obi-Wan versus Vader fight from A New Hope, kind of CGI'd and sort of made that a more modern fight. I think that fans are kind of owed an Obi-Wan versus Vader fight that is a little more modern, a little more exciting. Ultimately, if they do kind of confront each other again, I almost hope that it's more from like a far away or like sort of a sight, you know, or force battle. I don't know if we need that like lightsaber contact, but at this point, I think we're all pretty excited for whatever happens from Kenobi.
Right. And I think, Umar, you mentioned our last discussion that, you know, you're probably more excited for this Obi-Wan series than pretty much any other project that Disney Plus announced. So break it down for me. Like, what about like them coming back speaks to that child in you?
Well, for one, I mean, I know, like we've said before, even when Sean was on our last stream, that we kind of grew up, this is what we grew up with. So it's like, you know, for us, it's very exciting to have, you know, two characters that we as kids kind of know. This is our first kind of look at Star Wars. And I know that for everyone, whatever was the first thing that they, you know, latched onto is very special for them. Obviously, Obi-Wan Kenobi is a special character to us all. We haven't really gotten a chance to see him. Like, we've always wanted a solo. I know before streaming, we talked about, oh, you know, he should get his own solo. They should do something with him. Where you get a chance to actually see that, you know, you get a chance to see him, hopefully, and I hope this is what they dive into, is that he gets a chance to grapple with the fact that he failed. That he failed Anakin in a lot of ways. And I think that's a part of Obi-Wan Kenobi that we haven't. They haven't really dove into that. And I think that, so that would be really special to see. Obviously, the flashbacks, I'm sure that Obi-Wan probably thinks back to like different memories he has with Anakin, different things. They could probably flesh out their kind of relationship a little bit more, even more than what they already did in the prequels. It would be freaking amazing to see that. I know Clone Wars did that a lot. This can just be kind of an addition to that on a flashback. And I know, Shraz, you talked about even like hit, like if Obi-Wan mentally is kind of not completely stable, like maybe even having reimagining his fight with Anakin. I don't think they would touch that just because it's such an amazing fight the way it was, that it would be kind of weird. But if you did it in a way where it's like he's having nightmares about fighting him again or something, or meeting him again, or like a distorted version of him, because now you can mess with the CGI. There's so many possibilities that you could run with this show that I just think it's just hella exciting for most of us.
Right. And then we got one of the comments, you know, the Return of the Jedi, when Luke tried to convince Vader to come back to the light side. Vader says, "Obi-Wan once thought as you did. We never saw the interaction between Obi-Wan and Vader." That's a pretty good point. I think that
would be wild.
Yeah, if they do have that interaction and speak to each other, it would be very big. And I think people would go crazy. I mean, fans would go crazy about it, and everyone would be dying to see something like that. I think it's going to be crazy. And one of the things that I think Umar was touching on is that I want them to deep dive into the psychology of Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan's my favorite character in Star Wars, bar none. So for me, I want to deep dive into like his depression almost. And like, you know, he becomes a hermit on Tatooine, even though we're hearing that he might be, you know, traveling out of Tatooine for this movie of a series, and he's gonna go for like a watery planet and they're gonna try some things. But overall, you know, the objectives was that he's watching over Luke and he's training with Qui-Gon to eventually become a Force ghost. So I don't know if they want to bring Liam Neeson back and to go that route. We haven't heard anything yet. There's been rumors today that they might bring Commander Cody and flesh that relationship between Cody and Obi-Wan to have a level of trust, especially Clone Wars fleshed out more, but Revenge of the Sith also, like, there's a betrayal there as well. So I think they can do a lot of things of the fact that this guy, who was one of the best in his like field, like he's one of the best Jedi period ever, his whole religion, way of thinking, way of life, shattered, gone, destroyed, it's over. And then the guy who's like his little brother, he pretty much had to kill him. And from his perspective, he's dead. I don't know when he figured out that he was alive. Was that ever shown? And I don't know. So that could be something too, where he gets that moment of truth where he realized that, oh God, Anakin is alive, you know, like, and I wonder if he has like an extra level of guilt that he didn't finish Anakin off himself, but let him burn, you know?
There might even be like, he might even have like a small sense of happiness that he actually didn't finish him off, and that maybe, who knows, that he could probably come back or whatever. But if he senses his darkness, then I'm guessing that it's actually another gut punch, if anything, that like that nightmare that he might have in the first few episodes, that, you know, this guy might be alive, and then he learns that he is. It would be wild. I'm curious to see how dark they would go. I think they have a chance actually in this show to actually go dark, like to actually, maybe not Daredevil dark, but like dark, like darker than what they usually put out there. So it would be kind of cool to see how dark they would kind of go. Zion, you want to say something about that?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing to think about is how will they actually show Hayden as Anakin, because obviously he's in the Darth Vader mask and as James Earl Jones. So will it just be in a capacity where it's just Obi-Wan in like a force vision, like Sean, you kind of alluded to that a little bit, where it's more of like a force battle should they meet and not really a physical battle? Because if it's physical, then it'd be Darth Vader and James Earl Jones' voice. Of course, you can't have anybody but him. So, Sean, I mean, you can jump into this. How do you think they're actually going to incorporate Hayden into this? Because then it'd have to be Darth unmasked. Will it just be Obi-Wan fighting his demons and just envisioning it, or will it actually be present day somehow?
Yeah, so I think you raise a lot of good points. I think first, you know, flashbacks is something that we're kind of getting a lot of. I think that that's kind of a given, especially considering we're getting things now like Hot Toys from Clone Wars with, like, realistic Ewan and Hayden like faces on them. I think that that's just coming. I think that that's something we can expect at this point. I don't know if any of you guys have caught up on like the animated shows, but in Star Wars Rebels, in one of the episodes there was a confrontation between Ahsoka and Vader. And they did this really awesome moment where Ahsoka kind of cut open Vader's masks a little bit. And it was really more Anakin that she was seeing than it was Vader and like the scarring and whatever. And what they ended up doing, which I love, is so good. They used Matt Lanter's voice, who was obviously like Clone Wars Anakin, and like they used his voice when the mask was open versus like James Earl Jones's voice. So I think flashbacks are a big thing. Someone else brought this up to me that I think was really interesting, is if we see some sort of communication of Vader like without the helmet, whether it be like in his meditation chamber that we see in like The Empire Strikes Back or Rogue One. And we kind of get to see Hayden like really like deformed and scarred up from the injury. And we get to sort of see him and Obi-Wan communing maybe through the Force, similar to how we see Luke and Vader commune at the end of Empire Strikes Back. I think that that would be really cool. But really for like pure Hayden, I think we're going to get a lot of flashbacks to Clone Wars and a lot of nightmares. I really would love to see stuff like that. And then obviously I'd love to see sort of like a cut open Vader helmet in some sort of battle sequence and get a real good look at Hayden in that mask there.
Yeah, I think one thing that I think will end the Anakin Skywalker talk with this piece, but the last thing I want to make is that I want to see some of Anakin also struggling with like what happened, in a sense where, you know, like he's in the tank and like how Rogue One showed, and he's like coming out, like it hurts him. He's in constant pain. And I want that to kind of show through the how much pain he's in, not only mentally and emotionally because of what happened, but also physically, where he's like just a shell of himself. And I want to see if they give him a chance to be like that discarded, disfigured Anakin Skywalker who's, you know, limbless and just like struggling just to do basic things. I think that'd be one of the craziest things. And I think that I'm honestly very excited. I gotta be honest. In one of the comments, Obi-Wan seeing Vader's Anakin until the illusion is broken would be great for drama. So yeah, I'm excited to see how they do it, how they pull it off. If Dave Filoni's involved, it'll be even crazier if he helps in the script or whatever the case might be. But let's move from that and talk about Ahsoka, Sean. We'll keep you a little here longer. And give me your thoughts on this, because we talked, you were here for episode 2 weeks ago when we were talking about Ahsoka's appearance in The Mandalorian and what that means and what that entails. Well, a lot of us were obviously, this was almost a given, but now it's finally announced that Ahsoka is getting her own series, and it's going to be tying into The Mandalorian and Rogue Squad and another series, not Rogue Squadron, missing the name.
Rangers of the New Republic.
Right, yeah. Rangers of the New Republic. So, and they're going to tie together for a big event series down the road. But talking about Ahsoka specifically, what was your reaction when you heard that?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, I think it's a given. I think that we all kind of knew this was coming. You don't cast an actress like Rosario Dawson for such a, you know, a high-end Star Wars role and not kind of give her her own place. And we talked about it a little bit a couple weeks ago. There's obviously some stuff going on with her and outside of acting that makes the conversation a little bit more difficult to have. As for Ahsoka, I mean, yes, I'm very excited that we're getting an Ahsoka series. I would rather it be animated personally. This is nothing against Rosario and her performance. I've just grown really attached to Ashley Eckstein and her performance and everything that we got from her in Clone Wars and Rebels. And obviously Ashley has handed the baton over and has been very supportive of the community and the fact that they're doing this. Something that I think this show is going to kind of revolve around essentially will be what we're kind of following up with at the end of the episode of The Mandalorian with her kind of hunting down Grand Admiral Thrawn and looking for Ezra Bridger. That follows directly off of the epilogue of Star Wars Rebels, which we didn't get to talk about when we had the stream, but Dave Filoni kind of teased that the timeline might be a little more messed up than we thought in terms of when everything is kind of taking place versus when we thought it was. But yeah, no, I think that this show is going to kind of turn into the Star Wars Rebels sequel series that was long rumored. I don't think we're going to get that anymore, at least not until the Ahsoka series is done and maybe we get some live action appearances from other Star Wars Rebels characters. I hope that Sabine Wren is involved. It'd be great if they brought Temuera Morrison back and gave us some Captain Rex in there as well. And then I would expect, especially considering seeing how the end of The Mandalorian ends next week, seeing Ezra Bridger, if he shows up at the end of Mandalorian next week, seeing him involved as well. And then probably a live action Thrawn as well. But overall, very excited about Ahsoka getting her own show. I think that, as you said, it was a given and looking forward to seeing it.
So, I mean, it's crazy. I put the graphic up. They'll put it up again. The how many different Star Wars show we're getting. And it feels like definitely streaming is the new home for Star Wars, at least for the next few years. We know that Rogue Squadron from Patty Jenkins is probably getting a 2023 release. Could be 2022, but I think it's 2023. But the rest of them, I mean, there's a lot to unpack here between obviously Cassian Andor getting a series. Obi-Wan we talked about. Ahsoka we talked about. The Bad Batch, which shows that the animated format is definitely not dead and there's still things happening there. Same thing with Visions. And then Lando, The Acolyte, these are two kind of like, the underdog, missing the word here, but it's all good.
The Dark Horse.
Yeah, these are the Dark Horse series. I feel like could be really surprising that will surprise us when they happen. I want to see what they do with those shows and what's coming next. And then A Droid Story, that seems like more like from, you know, for your younger audience, but there's a lot happening. And that's what we want as a Star Wars fan, that, you know, you don't want to do so much where you're just kind of putting too much in at the audience at the same time. So there has to be a bit of a give and take there of, you know, how much is too much. But I think if these shows are paced out at like maybe, you know, two a year, one in the beginning of the year, one end of the year, something like that, then people will be able to at least, you know, consume it strong, because, you know, we're going to talk about this next, but with Marvel, they're doing something very similar where you're getting a show in pretty quick succession. Once WandaVision kicks off in January, it's going to be kind of nonstop heading into 2022 and 2023. So it's going to be very interesting to see what's next. But Sean, we appreciate you, man, for coming through and for speaking with us. You're always welcome anytime, brother.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, I appreciate it. Always love talking Star Wars on the stream.
All right, good stuff. All right, see you next time, man.
Thanks, guys.
So let's transition out from Star Wars and let's go to the comment section for the next topic. And we got our boy Max. He's saying that we're getting 3 Star Wars and 3 Marvel shows per year, which is, again, like, is this too much or is this the right amount, Samir? Like, are you even going to be able to watch 6 shows a year from Marvel and Star Wars? Or is this meant to be the next era where you actually pick and choose? It's not about watching everything. Just watch what you want.
I think, I'm going to be honest, I think Disney loves milking it. But I think because streaming gives you the opportunity to pick and choose like that. So I think I'll pick and choose the Marvel shows at least, because some of them look just mid to bad.
It's weird because since each of those individual things, the Marvel shows and the Star Wars shows, they're building their own little mini universe type thing. So it's like, if you start a few in one and start a few in the other, will you be missing out too much? So it's like, they kind of want you, either you start one or the other, or you start everything, you know, because if you pick and choose from the individual, like, oh, I'm only watching this Star Wars one, but not this one, and I'm only watching this Marvel one, not this one, will you be missing out? There's a crossover event down the road for each of them, respectively. So it's like a weird thing. They kind of trap you in this thing where you kind of have to see everything or see nothing. So it's like,
yeah. Actually, yeah, I would probably almost disagree with that, only because when I'm looking at, let's throw the list up again. Let's take Star Wars for an example. They did say Rangers, the New Republic, Mandalorian, Ahsoka. The three of these shows are going to tie together for a crossover event. But I think Rangers, the New Republic, and I could be wrong, Rhino, this seems a little more like, unless they do something very crazy, this feels like it could be skippable. I don't know. Ahsoka, I feel like, is a guarantee. Mandalorian, it's built up an audience. That's a guarantee. Cassian Andor, that's a guarantee people love Rogue One. But let's say Rogue One wasn't your cup of tea, then you might skip that one because it might not affect everything. Obi-Wan, I think that's an everybody show. I think everybody's coming through for Obi-Wan. Bad Batch, I think you'll get all your Clone Wars audience. Visions, you're going to get a smaller audience because it's an anime, but you might get people coming through. Lando, you get more. The Acolyte, probably less. Droid Story, less. And then Rogue Squadron, since it's for theaters, you might get more. So I don't think you need everything, but you know, you pick and choose where you go. I think Umar agrees with me there. You pick and choose probably is better.
I mean, yeah. I mean, the thing is, you can easily pick and choose and still kind of be involved. I mean, the internet
and you figure it out. You
can always figure it out, like what's going on. So. I'm just worried for Samir if he's going to watch Attack on Titan and all these shows all at the same time. It's going to be tough.
Don't worry, y'all.
What point are you making, Samir?
Thing is, for Disney, Marvel, it's different when everything is connecting to the movies. All the shows are connected to the movies, so you'd have to watch all of these to really get the real. Except maybe Hawkeye. I don't know if that's even connecting, but.
I mean, you want to watch Secret Invasion, Samir? It's going to tie together. I mean, they have to be the Skrulls. Armor Wars, they'll flesh it out pretty good. But
yeah, I'm gonna be real with y'all, Chief. Like I watched everything.
Like Miss Marvel will connect it to Captain Marvel, which I guess if you don't even like that, you would watch it. Moon Knight will be good. Ironheart, you love to see the Iron Man, like passing the baton kind of. Ant-Man, yeah. I don't know about that. Secret Invasions though looks interesting.
Yeah.
And She-Hulk will connect into what will it connect into?
I don't know. It's a vital or something, I'm sure. In the end, whenever Avengers 4 comes out and they make their next big crossover, then they're going to reward people who watched everything and everyone will come together, etc. So I can see that happening. But it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what happens next. And while we're on the Marvel topic, let's talk about the live-action Spider-Verse. You know, we touched on a little bit last week and still more news drops all the time, and it's crazy that we might be getting, it seems like the year of returns, you know, a lot of people are returning. You know, we saw Ben Affleck is back as Batman for Flashpoint, and then we know that the Snyder Cut is happening, so that's like a return, and now Anakin Skywalker's coming back, that's a return. So if everyone's coming back, then let's bring Toby and Andrew back as well, and let's get some Star Wars going. So any of you guys can go, like, what do you think about, like, just the feeling of things are coming back. Like I tweeted about this the other day, that if you're like a 2000s kid, 90s kid, grew up in the 2000s, you're going to be a happy camper if Hayden Christensen and Tobey Maguire are back in their respective roles, because you're getting everything you had as a child, but continuations of that. So Zion, since you obviously grew up in that alongside the rest of us, but I'll give you the answer, the question. What is that feeling like, that, you know, everyone's coming back?
Well, I think Spider-Man, it's just a different feeling, because obviously just as the character alone, we've grown up with him, and not only live action but animation as well, and the original Spider-Man films played such a huge part in our loving live action superheroes, because that was like basically the first biggest one. I know you had, there's X-Men and Blade, those kind of things, but nothing really compared to Spider-Man. So obviously that has a huge place in our hearts, and the nostalgia on that is huge, and the movies themselves are amazing. So just even the thought that, okay, they're bringing him back and they're bringing all of them together, for a Spider-Man fan or even a fan of superheroes in general, this is just like amazing and groundbreaking territory, and just to see it all come together. Hopefully they do an amazing job. I know there's it's hard to fail when they have so much going for them and they're bringing everybody back, but just watching it in the past, and then even the Andrew Garfield films, we love those two for different reasons, and some obviously two wasn't as good, but just everything come together, the culmination is just going to be amazing.
Yeah, and I'm gonna read another comment right now. It says, you know what I think most, what will probably make most many Star Wars fans watch all these shows, the fact that besides Andrew, they're all going to work in together for the sequel trilogy and kind of pray them together. That's why I agree with this also, that everyone, there's a sense where if you're a fan of any specific trilogy or character, you're going to get something. And same with Marvel, where every show is like a spin-off of one of the main characters. You know, the Falcon and the Soldier is a Captain America spin-off. WandaVision is obviously coming off of everything we got from Wanda and from the Vision, so we're getting their series. But it's going to be very cool to see what happens next. But for Spider-Man, I agree with all you guys that I'm personally very excited to see what happens next on that end and see where we go with it. I think it'll be pretty interesting. So let's switch from Marvel and Star Wars. We've been on that for a bit. And then jump into let's jump into some Batfleck news, because we did get some new news this week of describing what Ben Affleck's Batman movie would look like. And I'll read some of the stuff right now because I have it open. I have some of the quotes open from Deathstroke himself, where he kind of got into it and explained what the movie is going to be like. So I'll read some of them right now. And he called the Ben Affleck solo movie a movie where Deathstroke would systematically dismantle and destroy Bruce Wayne's life from the inside out. And he called the movie really, really dark and crazy. And he said, it's a really dark story in which Deathstroke was a shark or horror movie villain that was dismantling Bruce Wayne's life. It's this systematic thing. He killed everyone close to Bruce and destroyed his life from the inside out to make him suffer because he feels Bruce is responsible for everything that happened to him. So honestly, this is a project that, you know, ended up falling through, and it's sad because it wouldn't be really cool to see Ben Affleck have that solo presence. And we already see some of the comments are sounding off on that, and they want, a lot of people still want Batfleck versus Deathstroke. A lot of people still want these characters to come together, and we're gonna bring one of our writers on board to let's get his perspective. So let's bring in Aaron.
What's up? What's up? What's up?
What's going on, man?
Oh, just I am pretty disappointed we didn't get this movie. That whole plot, you know, that Joe revealed just kind of let me know that they were like, whatever Affleck was plotting out in his script, it was obviously going to lead to something really huge. And I have it's kind of a theory, but I have this theory where I feel like every DC film, just with this knowledge, was kind of setting up a trilogy for each. And this could have been a prequel to BVS, because if Deathstroke is going around killing everyone that, you know, Bruce knows and loves, it's obviously he knows he's Bruce Wayne, and he may have burned down, you know, Wayne Manor, which led to what we saw in BVS. It's a lot of different threads. I'm just like, oh my gosh, how did they drop the ball with this?
Yeah, and I think it's funny because we could have had a best of all worlds scenario. I truly believe that, because if we got the Batman in 2018, and even let's say after the fact, Ben is like, I'm out of here, I'm going to leave the role, and then Matt Reeves got his trilogy, both could have coexisted. But unfortunately, the way things went after the Snyder Cut, after Justice League rather, the way things devolved in the Warner Brothers studio with these kind of character interpretations, particularly Henry Cavill and Ben Affleck, unfortunately, that was pushed out the door. I think there is a lot more to the story of why Ben left. I don't think everything that has been reported has been put out there. Not everything has been reported, rather, but that story that might come out, you know, in the future. And I think it'd be very cool to see why this movie didn't happen. But to focus on the what if, before we get into kind of if this can still happen, as the resident Batman fan, I'm gonna go to Zion with this one. Not getting this movie, it's gonna be bittersweet, because we all know Matt Reeves is gonna bring the heat when it comes to Robert Pattinson and the Batman. But there has to be a bit of a feeling that, listen, we could have got something crazy with these two actors playing these roles and just going crazy with it in a dark movie with Ben Affleck directing it. So what is your thought on the whole matter?
I mean, definitely, you really look back and think, damn, we missed out a lot. We missed out on a film that would have been amazing. I know Deathstroke, he's like one of the few villains who can go toe-to-toe with Batman in almost every level, tactically, just physically. So just to see the synopsis that Joe gave on how his Deathstroke would systematically break down Bruce, obviously in every way, physically, mentally, emotionally, it would have been so amazing to see, because we know Ben would kill it in a role like that, where his Bruce is like just brought down to nothing. And like Aaron mentioned, that could have been a great prequel. It could have set up to why he's like the way he is, the way he's in an almost depressed, down, destroyed, war-torn state. It's like after all this, and then Deathstroke doing what he did, that led him to be the type of Batman he is at that point in Batman v Superman. So just missing out is obviously hard to hear about. And the more details come out, you're like, oh, if only we got this, if only this happened. And, you know, it makes me think that could there have been a chance they could have revisited this down the line? Should the Zack Snyder Justice League do really well? Could they expand further on these separate characters on streaming? I feel like now that all these deals coming out, it'll be less chance. And there's always less chance to begin with, but you know, it makes you wonder, kind of like hope that, oh, is there still road for this film to come out one day on streaming?
And a lot of people really do want Deathstroke, you know, in some capacity. He had a movie that fell through. A lot of people are campaigning. They want an HBO Max series with this guy, if possible. But I mean, Zach was setting this up for something, you know, and that's kind of the main point that I want to make, that, you know, and that boat scene, they explained that, I mean, Joe explained also in a different, I think, Umar, mute yourself for a second. Might be Aaron. Mute yourself for 1 second. Yeah, I think that might have been it. It's good now. So one thing that I've noticed is that he mentioned also in the same podcast, in the same interview, he said that the whole scene was reshot from Jesse Eisenberg's point of view, meaning the lines where he came, like, well, what do you want, Luthor, stuff like that, and then every line that Jesse Eisenberg said was reshot, which we knew, but it's very interesting what he was being told. And according to Joe, he was being told that Lex was telling him, here's how you get Batman, like, this is like almost like revenge for what happened in BVS, but like, here's what you're gonna do to Batman for me. So I don't know if that means it took place between JL and JL2, or if the case might have been for there, but there's definitely something being set up, and it wasn't the Injustice League, it wasn't the Legion of Doom, it wasn't anything like that. It was something where Deathstroke will come for Batman's head, and then how will Batman come through and fight back? And some of the comments are saying that, you know, Deathstroke, or not Deathstroke in the thumbnail, but here you go. If I'm mistaken, Deathstroke has beat Batman more than Batman has beaten him. So on the screen, that would have been a crazy fight scene. I mean, we talk about the warehouse fight, Umar, and we say it's one of the best Batman's fight scenes ever. Tell me how a fight scene between Deathstroke and Batman could have looked like had we had it.
It would have been wild, especially if, you know, especially if they got the guy they use in Batman v Superman, the stunt guy, I'm forgetting his name.
I missed it too.
Yeah, but he was freaking amazing. And just the way they kind of shot it too. I think Ben Affleck would have probably done a really good job of shooting. And plus, you know, like you got the feeling of Batman v Superman, this guy was just mauling people. Like, it was just, it's just crazy. Like, this guy's on a different level than everybody. But it would have been cool to see kind of, I mean, even Superman, I know Charles didn't like it, but he kicked Superman's butt. Like, he murked him. Like, he set him up on every level he was setting him up. I just think that it would have been cool to see his Batman, because of, like, the track record that he's had. It would have been cool to see someone kind of on his level and kind of mess with him a little bit. And I'm sure that he probably would have.
That's the name, yeah.
Yeah, that's the name. I'm sure he probably would have took some L's before he probably eventually would have, you know, whether he would have killed him or not, that's a whole different discussion, but, you know, but it would have been just cool to kind of see him go toe-to-toe with someone that's on his level in terms of,
yeah. Like, I know, I was wondering, was it that he killed everyone around him? I wonder if that would have been the death of Alfred. Like, I don't know, because I don't know if Alfred would have shown up in Justice League 2. If this was between JL 1 and JL 2, and you kill Alfred there, that would make Batman go crazy, and make him truly alone, which would set up his arc for Justice League 2, where most people were given the assumption that he probably would die in that movie in a kind of blaze of glory, but
because you would have nothing, you have nothing to lose. Nothing then. There's nothing,
yeah, there. And nothing to lose. Nothing to lose either.
Nothing,
yeah,
to lose. So he wouldn't mind to like go to the extreme to win.
Yeah. So it's me crazy. And Aaron, let me hit you up with another question, because we heard that Zack Snyder is actually restoring the IMAX ratio for BVS, and actually will be coming out before Zack Snyder's Justice League comes out. So give me your thoughts on that.
I'm so excited for this. I think someone on Vero asked him if this is going to lead to a trilogy box set, which I'm really hoping he does. Like, if he does all of them in the IMAX ratio, like from Man of Steel to Justice League, oh my gosh, Zach, we need this. We need this like today.
Yeah, and I think people, we got Zion and actually have got a chance to see it in true IMAX, one of the few theaters that were playing it on 66th Street in New York City. And when you watch it in that experience, when it opens up and you get the 4:3, when the 4:3 comes on the screen and you get it, then you see so much that happened 2-3 times for Beautiful Life, for the nightmare scene, for the Doomsday fight. So a Superman's funeral also, which is beautiful in that IMAX. So if we get a full remaster at 4:3, which will match perfectly with the Justice League movie that's coming out, then it would really feel like just one, this like one story. And a Man of Steel, I would love to, but I don't think that might not get the 4:3 treatment for some time. But BVS is tailor-made for it, especially because Larry Fong's cinematography, we had Larry on our podcast. The dude's a freaking genius when it comes to putting camera on these characters and making them look larger than life. And I think that's what people want most out of it. So I'm excited to see what Zach does with this. And if we get a new Batman v Superman release, he said he's usually very, you know, he has certain ways of saying things. He said, you're going to see a bit more. And that means both physically, meaning it's physically see more of the screen, but it could also mean I'll be adding a couple of more scenes. And we know this actually is a, you know, larger cut of BVS than the ultimate cut out there. So I don't know if Zach wants to add a couple of lines in there, a couple of moments in there, just to kind of make his director's cut of the movie. And, you know, it was called ultimate cut, not director's cut. So like Watchmen, I think it might get one more cut, which could be kind of crazy. I think it'd be very interesting to see what happens there. But Aaron, man, we appreciate you. Tell the crowd where they can find you. I know you got a lot of projects coming after that.
Oh, you can find me on Lovecraft and Back. I'm with so many things with Lovecraft Country. But mainly you can find me on Moldiversity, only on Wednesdays Live. You can find other wonderful people there. You know, I could go on forever, but just check us out. You know, you'll love us. Love being here. It's great to talk to all of you. You know, just love this platform.
All right, man. You know, you're always welcome. Aaron is a big writer, big time writer of comic book debate. He's done art for us. He's written for us. He's big time. So follow him on his social platforms and definitely check out Moldiversity. They're doing some crazy stuff and they're going to be big very soon. So appreciate you, Aaron. Thanks for jumping
in. All right. Thanks.
So we talked about that. We talked about Ben Affleck and we're trying to go in the last 10 minutes now where we can kind of do some rapid fire, jump through a couple of topics and see what we think about it, right? So the first, we're talking about Justice League, we're talking about BVS, but let's talk about how Patty Jenkins said she didn't like Justice League. And I found that was very interesting that she would kind of just go out there and she was asked about it. And I can read the quote she said about Justice League. She said, "No, I think all of us DC directors tossed that out just as much as the fans did. But also, that version contradicted my movie in many ways and this current movie, which I was already in production on. I knew when Zach was doing his Justice League where she ends up. So I always tried, like, I didn't change her suit because I didn't want to contradict his films. But yet I also have my own films and he's been very supportive. So Justice League is an outlier. They were trying to turn one thing into another. So it becomes like, I don't recognize half of these characters. I'm not sure what's going on," right? So I found that was pretty strong comments from Patty Jenkins. So Zian, what did you think of that when you heard her making that comment?
Well, I think it's clear. I mean, from that one scene where it's like Bruce and Diana in the cave or whatever, there's somewhere, and Bruce
they made like, it seem oh, like the cave, yeah. The
mantle, whatever. Who knows what that was? And you can see Diana's like she's completely out of character. She's like, "Oh, I don't want to be a leader either." It's like everybody's deferring to each other. Everybody's like a wimp almost in that film. So you can clearly see that's not the Wonder Woman who ran through the trenches in the Wonder Woman film, and clearly won't be the Wonder Woman who does whatever crazy stuff she will in Wonder Woman 84, because Harvey Pat herself, unrecognizable. So it's not surprising. You can just see from the first Wonder Woman film, the Wonder Woman just see that's somebody else. Like that's kind of a caricature and just a pathetic version of the Wonder Woman.
Yeah. I mean, Umar, give me your thoughts. Like, just her being that honest, because usually I've always felt Patty was a little more like safer. Like, she's someone who's safe when it comes to the media. She's not gonna say everything that maybe is on her heart. But in this one, she was pretty honest.
She got paid $10 million, fam. She's
yeah, and she might be going to Disney. She's going to Disney for Star Wars now, so she might be taking a break.
I mean, it's good to see her say that. You know, say what everyone else has already said, which is that obviously that movie is garbage. So it's cool to see her come out and say it. I think that for the longest time, I don't even think that was about being safe. I think with her, it was more about like, it's more of like an I don't care, like it's beneath me mentality, which is good because, you know, as much as, and she was supportive of the Snyder Cut and seeing what Zach wanted to do. And then she kind of reiterated that, you know, with my films too, that Zack Snyder's been supportive of what I'm doing, even if it's, you know, even if it's my own thing. So it's cool to see that, But I'm curious to see, you know, like Wonder Woman. I know she didn't quite answer completely about like how she felt about like the specific take that that they actually went with in terms of like the stupid things that were happening with her and Flash jumping on her and stupid things like that. But you can tell that there was kind of it was uncomfortable. She said a couple times after that quote that it was hard. That it was hard to see like that character be taken in that way.
Right. So it's gonna be interesting. I mean, we know things are changing on Justice League side, and the whatever has to happen behind the scenes with the investigation ending and stuff like that. This thing's gonna happen. The wheels are moving on that end for whatever it's worth. So things are happening. People are more open to talk now. So we'll see if more people talk in coming forward. So let's go through some of the comments and see what people are saying. And we got Max back in the comments. He's saying, well, could it be that for Wonder Woman 3 to happen, Zach has to finish his Justice League saga first? He could be done with it within 4 years, and she can make in that time Rogue Squadron and Cleopatra. I mean, that's a great point, honestly. And that's what I consider the more optimistic point, that if Zach did, you know, get told that he has the movies in the works, that he has more. I mean, you don't invest this much in HBO Max without a little bit of your own, you know, exclusive Justice League series for HBO Max. People are going to be watching it. So I would think that, yeah, if they told Patty that, listen, wait on Wonder Woman 3 a little bit till after we're done with the Justice League arc, and that'd be kind of crazy. But I also think that because of what happened with the HBO Max stuff we talked about in the morning and our first topic, lead topic, I think that also plays into why she might be leaving, because she's not about that HBO Max life at all. She's made that very clear. But and on Deathstroke, obviously, Ryan, he's back. He's saying, you know, Deathstroke along with Smoke and the MK character for the DLC. So Deathstroke, a lot of people say he might be a character for video games. He's a character who's coming back, you know? Like, he's like one of the comments saying that, you know, he's like a badass from the OG Teen Titans, where people grew up on Cartoon Network. My favorite comic character. So a lot of people love this guy, and I would not be surprised if HBO Max is looking and thinking, hey, maybe we can give him a limited series. Or what most people want is give Ben Affleck a chance to make his script, which I think is a little less likely, but, you know, anything's possible in these crazy times. So a couple of minutes left. Let's go quick rapid fire, and I'll get Samir your thoughts on this one, because Toby Emmerich was actually not a fan of Joker. And he, to discourage Todd Phillips from making the film, he kept making the budget lower and lower and lower, so that Todd would be like, I can't make this movie anymore. It's a little budget. But they made as low as $50 million budget, even less, like a $45 million budget, really. It made $1 billion and won an Oscar. So, Samir, tell me, like, what your thoughts on them actually, Warner Bros. Actually discouraging the movie. They didn't want this out. But look, when they focus on creators, what happens? You hear me, Samir? No, he's not. No. Technical. You hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Joker was an incredible movie, and if they went back on that, that would have been a huge mistake on Warner Bros.' part. They made a lot of mistakes so far, of course.
No, I feel like this is the fact that they were probably making this. The fact that they were making this around time Justice League was coming out. At the same time, you get a sense that, and I'm not gonna put it all on Toby, but you know, I'm not gonna, you know, not say what it is, but it goes at a pretty on point that, you know, like, when you have a stream, when you have a character like Joker and he has multiple interpretations, we know Jared Leto had a back and forth, then you know, like, what's coming next is going to be, they want to play it safe again. And the fact that we almost didn't get Joker is pretty surprising. I feel like, and it kind of goes, it's more for like what's been happening. I think it's part of the general trek, right? And anyone's thoughts on that, or we should keep moving forward with the rapid fire? So I think this is the next one. Small topic, quick topic. Superman has so little content these days that this is all we have. Before I do that, let me just get Ryan one more topic on him. He said that Joker Millen making $1 billion was a slap onto the face to everyone who was not letting it be made. It was surprised how much money. Even we were surprised, honestly. I didn't think it was going to make $1 billion. I thought it was going to be successful, not $1 billion. So people came through. The fact that a Joker movie with $45 million budget made more than Rise of Skywalker, no one could have predicted that.
And rated R.
Rated R. And it won so many awards. Like, it was, and I know we talked about this. Like, it's for me, it's the GOAT. Like, for me, it's the best that we've ever gotten in this space. So at the end of the day, like, they try to mess with it, which is weird because.
They didn't want it to happen.
Why? You know, it's like a weird thing that you would mess with your own kind of. Stuff, directors, whatever.
Yeah. So, quick, as we have a couple of minutes left for the stream is over. Superman and Lois got a new costume. So let me go through it really quickly. Here it is. So anyone give their thoughts quick.
I think. Listen, like, this is a promotion material. Like, all right, the suit looks all right. That's fine. The suit is good. But why did he have a 5 o'clock shadow in the promotion material? Like, what kind of message are they trying to convey? Are they trying to say that, oh yeah, Superman's like a regular average Joe, you know? Like, he came off from long day of work, Daily Planet, 5 o'clock shadow, you know? Like, something just off about it. I don't know. For me personally.
Do you want him to grow his beard back? Like, what are you asking for?
I mean, if they went that far, I wouldn't mind that. But, like, this halfway point, like, either Superman's stressed out or just not having a bad day, but for promotional material, I mean, you could at least get a clean shave.
What about you, Umar? What are your thoughts on this? Actually, I didn't mind it, honestly. I thought it was okay. Like,
to be honest, I think it's
fine. Huge improvement from what he had before.
Yeah, that was hot garbage. This is better. This is a step in the right direction. A step. They should make it bigger, though.
I was gonna say the same thing. The S is a little too small. But Samir, I'll give you the last word on this one. Is this a W or an L?
I think it's a little better than some of the cosplays that we've seen.
Just a little better.
I guess it's okay. I mean, it's what I expect
from the one like set pick that got like leaked out, whatever, something put out. It looked good actually. It looked pretty good. But I know like in this picture, it counts like cheap Photoshop. Like the cape looks a little Photoshoppy, but the design overall looks good and impractical from like the set shot that got set out. It looked good to me.
Yeah, and I think that in the end of the day, I feel like Superman, he gets so little like anything anymore. Like, there's no movies on the way. This is all we have, you know, Superman fans, which is sad because while Matt Reeves is putting on the heat with Robert Pattinson, we're getting the sickest trailer. Superman's still in the dustbin, you know, but we're getting him in Snyder Cut. But I feel like there's no new content coming out, like new content.
As soon as those kids asked him about that hippo, it was done.
That was it. But overall, you know, I'm not going to personally watch this show. I might watch a couple episodes, you never know, but maybe watch an event. But I'm personally not invested like that, so I might not watch it. I don't think anyone here is going to watch either, so I'm not even going to ask them. So 30 seconds on the clock. Let's go through the last topic really quick. We'll let it be a Mies, Zion, and Samir thing. Attack on Titan Season 4, the latest episode just dropped. So it was a little more an exposition episode, a little more talk. But Samir, we were talking last week about the difference between the two studios and how this new studio, while they're good, I think overall this is not a One Punch Man situation like Zion was afraid of, but there are like some things where they're not the same as Wit Studio. So give me your thoughts on the animation of this episode as we close out the stream.
I think there was like one scene where the animation was a little bit choppy. There was like some static movement like there was in the first episode with the Titans. But overall, I think the animation was good. I think this episode was a lot of foreshadow for what we have to come. So, what do you think, Zia?
Just same as you. I think some of the animation, certain scenes were like skipping frames almost. It was like they didn't draw enough frames in the scene, so it kind of looked kind of weird, like, kind of like wonky. But hopefully, that's just now. Obviously, it's not as bad as when Dragon Ball Superstar, and that was just garbage graphics or garbage animation. They really improved. I think on these small things, we'll probably see improvement down the road. But overall, like obviously, it looks really great. And it was great seeing some of the old characters and really diving into their psyche and what they're thinking, like Reiner and Zeke. And the episode is good. And obviously, I'm excited for next week's episode.
I think we're headed towards some good stuff. But that's pretty much it. Let's go through the comments one last time, see if anyone has any questions for us. There is one from a regular commenter. He's saying that fixed the wrong one. I was probably this one. So he said that any comic book one shot or series that you want to see come to the big screen, I'll probably take that solo. I want to see more of Superman. I think this goes with what we're saying. Like Rhyme said, there's no content. We're getting nothing these days for Superman. So if Superman comes out, Henry Cavill mentioned that For Tomorrow is a story he would want to do. I would agree with that. Take it that way. Jim Lee's freaking genius. So any story that Jim Lee has hands on, I would want to see that in a live action and see where it goes with. But it'd be crazy to see. But we really appreciate everyone joining in. Appreciate you, Max. It's been fun, these built different streams, and we're excited that you guys are enjoying it. We're also enjoying it. There's a lot of fun content on the way. But hell of a lot of topics this week, from Christopher Nolan, HBO Max, to Disney's Investor Day with Hayden Christensen and Ahsoka coming back, talking about live-action Spider-Verse, talking about Ben Affleck and Batflex, sadly not the movie that never happened, and then Zack Snyder going to IMAX and Patty Jenkins, The Joker, Superman's new suit, Attack on Titan. We've covered it all, and we're going to keep bringing the heat with you next week. So we appreciate everybody coming through. Appreciate you guys. Appreciate it. And then all our regular guys. So appreciate everybody. So from the Furuki Bros, We'll see you next time. Peace out.